The closing market report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for December 16th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, a new farm bill has been delayed into the new year, but it should have no impact on the price of commodities, at least through January. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on a bill introduced in Congress last week that would eliminate the renewable fuel standard. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Country Financial. Country Financial is hosting farm information sessions throughout Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates to the federal crop insurance program, the farm bill, and how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. Registration information is on their crop update website at countrycrop.com/update.
Let's see how futures settled this Monday afternoon. Hard red May wheat, 668 and three quarters, down seven. July, 667 and a half, down six and a quarter. Soft May wheat, 627 and three quarters, down seven. July, 629 and a quarter, down seven and three quarters. March corn, 423 and a quarter, down two and a quarter. July, 438 and a quarter, down two and a half. January soybeans, 1337 and three quarters, up 10 and a quarter. July, 1294, up 10. January soybean meal, 439, up 640. January soybean oil, 3975, down 8 cents. December live cattle, a settlement there of 131.95, and it was up 7.5. January feeder cattle, 168.17.5, up 110. And February lean hogs, 86.62.5, down 55. And those are the settlements this afternoon from Chicago.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says that dry weather is expected in the northeastern half, the two-thirds of Argentina, through the coming week, while periods of rain may come and go through the region from Buenos Aires to southern Cordoba. Temperatures will continue warm to hot in Argentina through the coming week to 10 days, with daily highs in the 90s and extremes slightly over 100 degrees. Topsoil moisture in Argentina may become very short from northern Cordoba into Santa Fe and Esterios. Brazil weather over the coming week will include net drying in the south from Rio Grande do Sul through Paraguay to Paraná into southern Mato Grosso do Sul. The next large precipitation event in the U.S. will begin in the southern plains and delta this coming Friday into Saturday, before intensifying and spreading northeast through all of the Midwest and Atlantic coast states during the balance of the weekend and on into Monday, December 23rd.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Feels a little interesting, huh, having a sleigh ride song when you're talking about Argentina weather conditions.
Yeah, it's a never-ending story, per se, but the whole world weather is kind of interesting, even snow in Egypt and some areas that's not seen snow over 100 years. But the market's focused on the southern hemisphere, like you led into there, and there's some areas starting to warm up and dry out, and that's got a little bit of a concern that trend would hold intact. The longer-term maps do promise some favorable moisture, but you know how the weather forecast goes, changes about every other hour, according to what the maps have to show. But there was talk that China was in the market for some additional beans into that Feb shipment just to go ahead and, you know, try to secure some type of supply or even flow of inventory into the country. So we'll see if we see some additional sales announced, as we go through the week here.
Well, the Lunar New Year is quickly approaching, so whatever sales that are on the books will have to come fairly soon.
Well, for the most part, if the price is right, you'll be surprised. A holiday won't matter a whole lot if the price is right. But that's one thing you got to watch. The trade volume will slow down during that holiday. In the meantime, the bean market's going to be caught in a trading range. The shorter-term players bought her here this morning and ran it up to resistance. I think there'll be sellers overnight. If you look at the hourly chart, especially on the beans, EGM beans got fairly good resistance up around this 1345 area. Seems we get there a little higher, we start to stall out. So the bean market continues to be range bound, but the overall support continues to be from the fundamental news of good export shipments, possible sales, commodity fund buying, and some weather. And the market's going to try to hold together for the most part as we keep moving down the road.
Could the week's soy trade be influenced by the Fed meeting, which starts tomorrow?
Well, that's the thing. Overall, there's ideas that the Fed's going to have to continue to pump money into the economy or keep things artificial here for a while. There's ideas that the overall Fed help could last clearing the 2016, but at some point in time that's going to come to an end. It's just a question of when.
There's a window for hedgers. Would this be a week where you would consider catch-up sales or sales for 13 and 14 soybeans from a hedger standpoint?
Well, we would think so. I don't necessarily, use an outright short position. I'd have somebody type of covered position, if you're pretty well sold up. Just the fact that we're going to start seeing a lot more volatility come into the marketplace as we turn into 2014. But, from a producer's point of view, the risk continues to be to the downside. So we got to use strength in here this winter to get caught up on some sales.
Would it be unreasonable or reasonable to think that November 14 soybeans could eventually see $10.
Well, that's the thing we're working on here is what type of acreage shift we're going to see here in the U.S. coupled with a bigger production out of the southern hemisphere. Southern hemisphere comes through and those beans flow freely into the world market channels. It's going to be awful hard to, and no weather problems, it's awful hard to get bullish on the South American beans, then plus two, we come here and have an additional, 3 to 5 million and more acres. I don't think we're going to see the 7 or 8 million acres additional beans that the summer touting in favor of West. It's going to be awful hard to see a significant move to the upside. But those benchmarks you gave are longer-term support levels, and then that could be reality, especially if this economy and world economy start to cool a little bit this winter.
All right, let's turn our attention to corn. 2 weeks ago, we had the Chinese turning away from GMO corn and sending it to other countries. And then last week, out of nowhere, although if you had been to the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention in November, you had heard rumblings of this, that a certain California senator was going to file a bill, the Ethanol Mandate Elimination Act of 2013, political reality there. So those two things in combination has seen corn on the defensive, and I think it begins actually stems from the ethanol market, which is in free fall, which even though if you look at the act itself, you begin to think, first off, how can this act ever get through committee? And second, it really only has teeth if ethanol is unprofitable.
Well, I don't know what else you can throw at the corn market. I mean, you know, as bearish as it could be, the funds want to sell it and stay short here for a while. And, you know, like you mentioned, just one thing after another. When you look at the overall weekly ethanol report, it does show that there's some profitability in ethanol. But, you know, from a long-term perspective, you know, we'll see how things play out in Washington. There, I think there's maybe concerns longer term, but short term, I think the ethanol, you know, numbers are going to still be met. It's still going to be part of the formula. You know, long term, taking, you know, losing anywhere from 4.8 billion to 5 billion bushels of corn of ethanol demand would be just devastating to the farm economy. So I don't foresee that happening, but, you know, that's something we got to watch as we move down the road.
And all of this has corn technically back knocking on the door of 418 in the March contract.
Well, the these went off 420 and a half here. That's today's low in the March, so we're down where, you know, Dease went off. You know, there it could probably slip lower in here, but it just confirms there's support down here in the low $4 area. We could probably tread water all winter long here, and once the March goes off and the May comes on and rolls down and see that roll down effect take hold here. So it could be a type of situation where some of these analysts are going to start talking about the winter blues.
Will there be a seasonal taking effect in the wheat market?
It happens later on here this winter. Here we'll see what type of weather, fears of maybe some freeze out and so forth. But we've done some serious fundamental damage in the wheat complex with this last report. You know, we got ample world supply numbers to work with. We were seeing quite a bit of competition worldwide amongst different countries in the wheat market. So fundamentally, it's going to be off hard to get something big to go here. It's going to be some type of event here as we go into late winter to spark that seasonal up.
Let's turn our attention to the livestock and been keeping an eye on February and April futures charts and wondering whether or not the higher pork production that we've seen of late was going to weigh on these particular charts later down the road or not.
Well, it's obviously we put the high in here back first part of November as far as the futures go. We're just not seeing the demand kick in here, seasonal ham demand like the trade was looking at. We're seeing ideas of as this grain market moves lower, we're seeing heavier carcass come across on the rail. We're seeing some optimism being renewed on expansion. So, you know, the meat complex has its work cut out here as we go through this winter. The main thing is we got to watch is we'll continue to hear virus concerns continue to spread across the Midwest. So we'll see how the industry handles that.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care, Dave.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
In agricultural news, House and Senate Agriculture Committee leaders say they expect both chambers of Congress to pass a new farm bill in early January. But the lawmakers say they will not reveal details on the agreement until then. The principal negotiators met on Friday and had what they say is another productive meeting. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas says the bill now needs to be vetted by the House and Senate Agriculture Committee lawyers. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Debbie Stabenow says there is no question about whether the committees will come to an agreement to pass the bill in early January, but she also says that they will not release a framework agreement until early January, so the other 37 conferees on the farm bill would have a chance to look at the agreement. Lucas told reporters that lawmakers have reached agreement on the commodity title, crop insurance, and the nutrition title, including food stamps. Some information on the deal has leaked out. It appears the bill would cut the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program by $8 billion over 10 years, twice what the Senate wanted, but only a fifth of what the House approved. On the commodity title, it appears farmers will have a choice between payments based on revenue losses and payments based on target prices. Payments would be made on base acres, but it appears likely that farmers will be able to uphold their bases to reflect changes in what they grow compared with the 1980s when the current bases were established. Members of the Iowa congressional delegation and state officials are pressing the White House, USDA, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to hold a field hearing in the Midwest on the proposed reduction to the renewable fuel standard volumes. EPA has called for an overall reduction in the RFS of about 3 billion gallons for 2014. EPA held a public hearing in Crystal City, Virginia, on December 5th, taking some 150 comments. In a letter sent to President Barack Obama, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, and U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, the Iowa contingency asked for a similar hearing to be held in the state, the nation's leading ethanol, biodiesel, corn, and soybean producer. The Energy Information Administration today says that surging U.S. crude oil output will rise by 800,000 barrels a day through 2016 when it nears 9.6 million barrels a day, the record high hit in the 1970s. The EIA says increased use of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling techniques in shale oil fields will continue the recent acceleration in U.S. domestic oil output, which had fallen to a 62-year low of 5 million barrels a day in 2008. The EIA says oil output will then level off and start a slow decline after 2020. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A group of U.S. senators led by Dianne Feinstein from California has introduced a piece of legislation which would eliminate a U.S. government biofuels mandate. Todd Gleason has more on what some are calling a message bill.
Feinstein and a bipartisan group of senators, representing primarily livestock production and or crude oil producing states, introduced the legislation the second week of December. It's unlikely to pass, but it certainly sends a message on how the group feels about ethanol made from corn, says University of Illinois agricultural policy specialist Jonathan Kappas.
So what the bill does technically is it eliminates the requirement, the RFS mandate in the statute for it's the overall mandate. So you have the renewable fuel mandate that goes from 4 billion gallons to 36 billion. It just strikes that from the statute and then leaves in place all the other pieces, the advanced biofuel, cellulosic biofuel requirements. But it doesn't have the actual RFS, the overall RFS pieces is stricken, would have been stricken from should this ever become law. But it is, it's another in the series of bills and efforts aimed at the RFS from its many opponents.
So the Corn Ethanol Mandate Elimination Act is a message bill. Still, it's a bill and will go through the legislative process.
It's been referred to the Environment and Public Works Committee, Chairwoman Boxer, Senator Boxer's committee, which notably on Wednesday held a hearing on the RFS, and the chairwoman made it pretty clear in that hearing that she was not interested in backtracking on what progress has been made with the RFS. So this is not likely to be something the committee takes up and gets to work on anytime soon.
The legislation is a short document of just 3 pages. It is supported by Senators Feinstein, Coburn, Hagan, Collins, Toomey, Flake, Corker, Burr, and Risch. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Brian Stark of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Dave.
After the first of the year, what kind of movement are you anticipating at the Andersons for corn and soybeans?
Well, I think in the first part we should see decent movement. I think really ultimately it's when the farmer needs cash flow, and we may be a little bit surprised that he lasts a little bit longer past the first of the year than we anticipate. But I would say by the latter part of January, first part of February, you'll probably start to see a little heavier movement from the bin site.
So does that mean that the basis window will remain open a little bit longer than anticipated?
I think so. Until you start to see more movement talked about in the countryside, I imagine the processor's basis will remain firm. We have not seen it break yet. It's been kind of flat here the last week to 10 days. But as soon as you see a larger movement, I think basis could get weaker.
How much weaker?
That's a good question. I think the basis downside's probably got at least 5 to 10 cents from what the processors are paying today across the board whenever movement does get going.
So that's in corn and soybeans?
I would say strictly just in corn. I think beans, there's stronger demand, as evident by the crush number we saw again this morning, and the bean demand isn't going away. So I think bean basis will remain at least flat and potentially get stronger as we try and search out the remaining beans in the pipeline.
Any chance that this falling out of bed of the ethanol futures will have some effect at the basis level?
I don't think so. Margins have been good in the spot, and although futures have dropped here recently, they're still at profitable levels to a point where the ethanol plants have been able to bid aggressively for corn, and I don't see that changing. I mean, as you look out further, margins aren't quite as good in the deferreds, but obviously people are continuing to drive, and especially around the holidays, I would assume gasoline consumption will continue to be increased.
When you take phone calls and field those, what are the main questions producers are asking?
Is corn going to rally? I think that's the general question. And obviously, demand has been suspect. And I think the farmer's waiting for a number, something around $4.50. I think he's lowered his sights from $5. I think that's become apparent in the last month and a half. But we're still probably 25 to 30 cents away from when they're willing to pull the trigger.
Go ahead and give us your prices for the day, then,
please. Cash corn today, we are $4.15. Fall of 14 corn, $4.25. Cash soybeans, $13.38. And fall 14 beans, $11.36.
Thank you much, Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Brian Anderson of the Stark of the Anderson. Brian Anderson. Brian Starks of the Andersons. And he is in Champaign, Illinois. Hey, have you tried this website yet? willag.org, willag.org. All of our analysis and audio is there, as well as a chance to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter. You can do that by clicking on willag.org and then looking in the right navigation window for the subscribe link. I'll be back in 2 minutes, and we'll have agricultural weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It's National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. It's also Eat What You Want Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, American colonists revolted against the British government. Dressing up as Native Americans and armed with small hatchets and clubs, they boarded the Dartmouth and Beaver and Eleanor. From the ship holds, they dumped over 90,000 pounds of tea overboard, an event that would become to be known as the Boston Tea Party. Tea washed up on the shores around Boston for weeks. In 1833, Seaman Ashiel Knapp was born. An American agriculturalist, he began the system which evolved into the U.S. Cooperative Extension Service. he introduced improved methods of farming into Louisiana, spurred the development of rice culture in the Southwest, demonstrated methods for curbing the boll weevil in Texas, and inaugurated a federal program of farm demonstrations throughout the South. Knapp's legacy was to bring progressive agricultural methods to the American farmer. In 1863, Gerald Heineken purchased the Amsterdam brewery, the Haystack, which dated back to 1592. This was the beginning of Heineken beer. In 1884, William Fruin of Minneapolis, Minnesota, patented an automatic liquid vending machine. And in 1990, Harlan Sanders died at Shelbyville, Kentucky. He is best known as the founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Drew Winter from World Weather Incorporated.
Stormy weather seems to be occurring quite often across the Midwest here recently, and we're going to see more of that after a little bit of a break here. The next storm system that's going to be coming into the region will be one that moves across the northern plains into the northern parts of the Midwest. That will occur likely Thursday into Friday. Snowfall may run 1 to 3 inches, maybe something a little bit greater in a few spots. Once that storm system Thursday and Friday passes through the northern Midwest, some cooler air will seep southward again across the region, but it's not going to be very significant until after a second storm system pushes through the region. That second storm system will be the more significant event. It is expected to impact a big part of the Midwest, the Delta, and Southeast, just like this past weekend, with generalized rain occurring initially, followed by a shot of snow as the system pulls out of the region and cold air pours into the region. We're expecting to see quite a warm-up this week in the southern states, especially the Delta and the southeastern portions of the country, where we'll see temperatures getting into the 60s and 70s before that storm system arrives late in the weekend during the weekend. The heat down there and the buildup of colder air in the plains will likely set the stage for some possible severe thunderstorms, maybe late this week or into the weekend. We'll continue to monitor that rather closely. None of that severe weather at the moment looks like it'll impact the Midwest, but it cannot be ruled out, and a close monitoring of that will be necessary for late this week. Our temperatures in the near-term part of the forecast here are still expected to trend a little bit warmer, but only gradually. We'll look for highs today in the mostly 20s and 30s across the northern portions of the Midwest. Some teens will occur across the Great Lakes region in particular. We'll look for some readings in the southernmost parts of the region getting up into the 40s. That'll be the case again tomorrow as well. And as we get into the second half of this week, we'll see maybe a quick surge of warmer air with 40s and 50s occurring in many eastern Midwest locations outside of Michigan. And then perhaps some 60-degree readings will occur just south of the Ohio River, including portions of southeastern Missouri and Kentucky, just before we get involved with the late week and weekend storm system. Now, in contrast to that, at the same time, we'll see some high temperatures only in the single digits and teens in the Dakotas and Minnesota as we get into Thursday afternoon, setting up that strong temperature contrast I referred to before that might give us some severe weather across parts of the eastern U.S. as we move into the weekend. The colder air will eventually spread across a big part of the Midwest, and that's one of the reasons why we think there might be a little bit of snowfall at the end of the coming weekend storm system. That storm system, by the way, is still expected to begin to debut in the southern plains initially, and that will probably take place as we move from Friday into Saturday. Precipitation across the heart of the Midwest will come shortly thereafter, and we'll likely see widespread precipitation evolving during the heart of the coming weekend. And again, we'll start off with some rain and thunderstorms and maybe end up with a little bit of snow. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can sign up for our free Ag e-newsletter. To do so, go to the web at WILL.AG.org, that's WILLAG.org, and click on the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.